Atira has seen and talked with angels and her spirit guide for as long as she can remember. And now she connects you with spirit as the angels answer your questions on past lives, passed over loved ones, dreams, relatives, workplace, and spiritual experiences. Atira is an Edgar Cayce Foundation handpicked psychic and is featured in The Days of Wonder by G.W. Hardin. Atira's magical, uplifting, worldwide readings are just $100 for 45 minutes, which includes an audio tape. Email angelreadings@angelscribe.com. That's angelreadings@angelscribe.com for an appointment, or go to Atira's website at angelscribe.com. For metaphysical, straight talk from the heart, it's Atira, Angel Mystic.
Welcome to Metaphysical Straight Talk from the Heart. I'm your host, Atira. And I have an interesting subject to talk about today. I have been pondering in the last few months, as I've taught my class and some workshops, about how much responsibility we want to take for what happens in our life. It's very interesting when you're in the workshop or when you're in that book that's where you know you really got the ahas or you've listened to the secret. In that moment, you've really got that you're co-creator, and you take responsibility for it, usually when things go right. But this last week, I've had one of those weeks where nothing seemed to go right in my world. Computers were breaking down, cell phones weren't working, everything electronic and everything, a lot of things were going wrong or not as I thought they should go. And you know, after about the third series of things not going the way I wanted them to go, you could say, you know, I know a lot of clairvoyants, including John Edwards, talks about affecting electronical equipment. So the computer I could even write off to, that my electromagnetic field, my spiritual field, got in the way of that. You know, that sounds pretty esoterically cool, and I can take esoteric responsibility for that. But then when other things are not going the way I perceive or would like them, I know that I have fallen from my state of natural beingness into it works for everybody but me. And it's funny because I teach so much metaphysics about personal responsibility, co-creation, all those things. But I'm a spiritual soul living in a human body, and so I can fall back into my BS, my belief systems. And last week when I was teaching my class and we were in a seance and a spirit came through and talked about the state of grace. When I was actually channeling, so I was unconscious. So I didn't hear it, but later I listened to the CD that was made, and I was awestruck by that statement, walking in a state of grace. What is being at one or being in grace, really? This person, this channeled entity, whose name is Amara Hamara, talked about that Jesus created a state of grace, that where in that state of grace, healings happened. He never took credit for his healings, a lot of the manifestation that Jesus created, but rather he said, this entity said, that he was in a state of grace. He was never in separation of God, Goddess, all that is. So walking in grace is when time and space kind of no longer exist. I think a lot of people have had those times where they're in that state of beingness where everything stands still. They're kind of wrapped in love, sometimes even illuminated. Sometimes they'll see other entities in that experience. And sometimes it's just that illuminated moment. In fact, Padre Pio, other saints talk about this illumination, this thing that happens sometimes, this ecstasy, some of them call it ecstasy. When they are communing one with God, sometimes even they've had levitation, things like that happen, where they're in that quote-unquote state of ecstasy. But I think a lot of these saints and people like Padre Pio, Jesus, many of them stayed in that state of connectedness, that walking in grace. And that's why they could facilitate these amazing experiences of distant healing, or even Jesus' shadow fell on the lepers and they were cured. So this state of grace is a fascinating subject I'd love to talk about today. And I'd love to have you call in at half past the hour if you've had these any of these kinds of experiences. Because I think we teach by sometimes just by our experiences, by understanding those. But I will take calls at half past the hour. I thought, as I kind of listened to this tape and what this entity was talking about, the choice, the personal choice that Jesus stayed in the state of being, I realized that in every moment we do have a conscious choice whether to be bothered or not bothered by an experience. By creating the state of grace, we place ourselves in our own really divinity. In other words, in that moment we're in the state of grace, we are non-separation, and so we are one with God, Goddess, all that is. When I say that, I mean, you know, I'm going to use the word God during this discussion, but I really do mean that infinite intelligence, that creative force. And the difference between Jesus, other masters, and us is that we get caught in the humanness. We get caught up in that. And it's so funny, a friend of mine likened it to, you know, when you go to the movies and all of a sudden you're lost in the movie, in perhaps the role of one of the characters that you can personally identify, and pretty soon you are in the movie. Till the show's over, you are lost and so wrapped into that identification that you're not separate. You're experiencing the emotions. You might even be crying while you're sitting in the seats and feeling really, truly one with that character on the screen. And then the show's over and reality sets in, and you kind of snap back in your body and go, wow, whoa, I could really, you know, relate to that person. And it's true that we are gods and goddesses, and that at times we are innately who we really are, and we're in that state of grace, and we get the whole creation idea, we get the oneness. But then we fall into that sleep state. Again, you know, all of a sudden we fall into the humanness, the role of this life, and we're caught up in the movie of this life, and we lose our perspective of what creating and what it is really about. And so it was interesting to me as I listened to this entity from another time talk about coming back to being in the moment. What does it take to be in that state of grace? And one of the common things that this spirit said and talked about was, to be in the state of grace is to be one with God, but it is also to be of service to ourselves and others. And I thought that was an interesting statement, because when we think of service, often we think of being service, helping someone else. But we don't think about being in service to ourselves. And sometimes I think that's the thing we need most, is to be in service to ourselves. It's not ego. It's to pay attention to, are we being kind to ourselves? I listen to myself, and Mary Ellen and other friends of mine often bring this up, that I can be very kind and spiritual to other people, but I'm very hard on myself. And I think it's very human to get caught in that beating oneself up thing. And we need to start really paying attention to, because as I went over this CD that was given to me and listened to some teachings coming out of me that so wasn't me, in that it was a total different voice, a total different use of language, a total different energy when this entity spoke. I envied this entity because I could tell that spirit owned the state of grace. And I really was led during this week, during the time where everything seemed to be not going wrong, the universe was really providing incredible books, things to reiterate, to bring to my attention this fact of the state of grace, the choice, the conscious choice for us to choose the state of grace over the state of ignorance. And so it's almost like, you know, the really truly I believe this, that the universe will keep telling us till we get it. They'll bring it in books, in people that will say things to us. They just keep helping us to remember our innate self and to be kinder to ourselves. So this whole journey of this last week had a profound effect on me, because it really brought me back into prayer, but even different than I do. I mean, I spend a lot of time in prayer, and I take time, I pray for my clients before I read, I pray, I have a prayer list that I do, I pray for people that are in the war. There's a lot of things I do, but that is focused intent prayer. But I got back into the mode of prayer, random prayer, I guess I would say it, instantaneous prayer, that the moment something would remind me to pray for somebody, other than I've always prayed if I hear a siren or if I hear, you know, a police car, I pray for the policeman that's going to answer it and the people that are going to need the help. But in this week, I got more connected or aware of praying for simple things and experiencing the immediate moment, because we get really caught up in being not in sync with spirit, not in sync with the moment. My guide, Don Salas, a long, long time ago, said to do everything as if we were in prayer. And at first I didn't get that, because I had a real in-the-box form of prayer, meaning that my mother raised me a Southern Baptist, so prayer was a structured thing. I didn't get for a long time, until I was in my 20s, that prayer was as simple as saying, I forgive you, I bless you, I pray for you, for your highest good, that it is outside of a religion. You know, most of us think about prayer in a structured religious way, be it the rosary, be it a structured prayer, Our Father who art in heaven, those things. And those are prayer. They're wonderful forms of prayer, but they're not sort of instantaneous, unformed, natural communication between you and God, which just comes out of your heart and soul instantaneously, where we just say, dear spirit, in this moment, I bless the trees and the flowers around me. And it is being prayerful or in the state of grace, seeing yourself at one with everything, be it an animal, a plant, a tree. And I know you've heard of people who hug trees. Absolutely. It's part of how we should be in every moment of our life, and so seldom seem to be able to hold more than 10 or 15 minutes. Most of us are grateful for things in a moment when someone's paying attention to us or done something kind for us. We're grateful for that moment. But really, truly being in a state of grace is being grateful in every moment for everything that comes into our path, whether it's good or bad. Because in the moment, it is a gift. I had to look back at what was a gift in my computer being down, because it was immensely frustrating, and most of you know I'm not techie as it is. Well, there was lots of gifts within that. There was a gift that while I couldn't be on that computer, I could be doing other things that turned out to be extra blessings and more, actually really truly more important than me getting lost trying to work on that computer. I also had the gift of having a husband who didn't mind spending the time trying to figure out what the heck I'd done to it. But there's so many gifts that come to us, but we get caught up in the woulda, shoulda, coulda moments of life. We forget to be grateful. And one of the things that the secret, I really think, the blessing of that secret, the DVD, is that it does talk about writing a list of being grateful, the things you should be grateful for in your life. We need to spend time in the moment, and most of us don't. We're very busy in living what happened, whether it's 20 minutes ago or 20 years ago, or we're caught up what we're going to do tomorrow, the next day. Most of us, you know, now you have your little Palm Pilots or you have your little cell phone and, you know, your week's planned out, sometimes months and sometimes 3 months. I used to be a person that was really 3 months out. And I realized that by doing that, I was missing the moments. And sometimes we have to be a few months out for business meetings, for certain things in our lives. But we really, truly also have to spend some time hanging in the moment, the vibration of the moment. Because if you look at children, they are so delightful. Because most children, especially from birth, you know, babies to about 5 years old, they are in the moment. When you watch them playing with something or looking at something, they are in the moment. They are focused on that thing. They are laughing and giggling. They're finding their joy. They're holding it. And they're really experiencing the beauty of really the state of grace, of being in the moment. Really, truly, and fortunately, I think computers are great. However, unfortunately, I think they start so young on computers now the kids are getting so they're not out in nature. They're not out in the beingness of the sunshine and just the beauty that God, God is all that is, has created for us. So sometimes we need to be in the moment of whatever experience it creates, that divine state of grace. Today I hope that some of you will call in at 1:30 and talk about something that reminded you about being in the moment of the state of grace, an illumination. Sometimes it is, unfortunately, a near-death experience, I think, can certainly give you the state of grace. It's not the one I'd be looking for, and I really don't want to advocate cosmic 2x4s anymore. I think it's much nicer if we can take the time to experience that grace by getting it from the feathers of life, the things that remind us to be in the moment and to pay attention to those things that happen to us. We also certainly can, and of course I advocate this all the time, is communicating with our angels, guides, and masters to help keep us on that path of creation, of being in the state of grace, the awareness or expandedness of consciousness. One of the ways Spirit helps remind me to stay on my path is to be able to help other people. For example, Jesus said, "What you do to the least of my people, you do unto me." And I always remembered that quote from a little kid. And so for me, really, when I see someone who's homeless, I really try not to judge. I just trust that for whatever their path is, whatever their choices have been, that my job is not to judge. That's a gift, not to judge. And then I ask, "Dear Spirit, in this moment, how can I help that person for their highest good?" And sometimes it's giving a meal, and sometimes it's giving them a warm pair of gloves. Each of us can make that little bit of difference in some other soul's life. And truly, by that gesture, we both receive. The person receives something, and you receive the gift of kindness and love in that moment. One of the ways we can reach that state is through prayer, too. And so the times we spend in prayer for someone, and I really encourage people to pray for people who are passed over too. If you have somebody you have unfinished business with and they passed over and you were not able to clarify what was going on in this lifetime, perhaps you were abused as a child, verbally or physically. Perhaps you had a falling out with someone and they passed away before you could have the conversation of forgiveness. It's never too late because our consciousness continues. And so when you pray for a person, really what you're doing is sending a cosmic hug to them. The energy wraps around them, and they are filled for that moment with the love that you choose to give out at the moment. And so forgiveness, to cut the ties between you, to help them move on, to help you move on, is a gift. And sometimes we struggle with that, that need to forgive or get forgiven. And the sad part is sometimes we don't want to forgive because we're going to make them suffer, you know? And the problem is, who's suffering? You know, we're the ones that are stuck in the suffer mode. You know, they're on the other side getting help from angels, guides, and masters, getting filled with love more unconditionally every day. And we're the one playing the 45, wondering why our life is not moving on and forgetting that we may be teaching the next generation bad habits. So this interesting study, or wanting to know more about the state of grace, I think is a really interesting study to start looking at. How can I choose to create the state of grace in my life? And I don't care if you call it state of grace, illumination. I don't know. It has lots of names, lots of ways to look at it. So we all have the opportunity to create the state and be part of that state. But one of the things we really overlook is receiving that state of grace. I'm one of those people, I'm real good at giving to other people, but I kind of stood behind the cosmic door in heaven when God was passing out receiving. And for a long time, it was very hard for me to receive. I thought, it was ego, oh my gosh, I don't deserve, all those things. But the truth is, to be in my oneness with Creator, I have to learn to be in balance, and that is to give and to receive. And so learning to receive, when we are in separation, we feel fear and aloneness, whether it be if you're feeling in separation from your husband, your wife, your sister, your brother, your mother, father, whoever. we have to go back to choosing oneness. So one of the great exercises we can experience is to go into that oneness and to take a moment and hold something you love. You can hold your child, I don't care if you hold your cat, your dog, and in that moment feel that bliss, feel that love, that mutual bond of giving and receiving, and then learn to carry that out in the world with you, because that, in that moment when you're feeling so loved by that pet, by that person, children give unconditional hugs. I love to be hugged by kids. And experience that, and then try to hold that, and to hold that energy and let it expand, and then include more people into that experience and sharing. It's interesting to me that people, I'm a hugger. I was raised a hugger. My mother was from Alabama. She hugged everybody. So when a person that's used to being a hugging kind of person hugs someone who is used to being a non-touch person, you can actually feel the energy struggling with that, because often people who don't like to be touched, I'm not talking necessarily about someone who's been abused. That's a whole different scenario. They may be on red alert because of the actions that have happened to them and need time to heal. But sometimes people are just never grew up being really hugged and nurtured. And so they want it often, but they just don't know how to accept it or to experience it. It's almost overwhelmingly threatening to them. And yet, at some core level, they want it. So certainly you have to honor people's state of being where they are, because sometimes you can send love without having to hug or touch. But certainly learning how to experience what being hugged by somebody who feels safe. We all know someone who we've been around who is that incredible state of loving. You know, whether it's a grandmother, my mother, it was my mother for me. My mother was one of those amazing people that just loved everybody. She, you know, the neighbors down the street, you know, everybody came to her house if they had a problem. And she truly was one of those mothers to the world. And so it's sort of appropriate that we're talking about this kind of loving, mothering, nurturing oneness energy today, since we're so close to Mother's Day. So happy Mother's Day to everyone out there. Because that mothering energy, the energy of love, tends to feel a little more feminine than masculine, although I believe it is a true balance. It is neither male or female. But that feeling of love, that feeling of oneness, is something that as we nurture it, it grows and expands, and then you learn to hold it. Once you learn to hold that state of grace, then people are drawn to you. People are drawn to that. They know that you're loving. They know that there's something different about you, that your energy or the light, something about you is different, and they want to experience it. So people will want to hang around you. You'll have people just say, I like being around you. When I'm around you, I walk into that state of grace, I no longer worry about what's going on in my life. For those moments that you're in somebody's state of grace. For example, I've heard people talk about being in Yogananda's presence, Paramahansa Yogananda's presence, or being in the hugging saint's energy, or in any deity or person that you consider a master here on earth. Often, I would think actually being in Mother Teresa's energy, perhaps the Pope's energy that passed. There are people who choose to teach only love. That energy generates that state of grace. And so as you're in that energy, you're drawn to it, you have this inner calm of your soul that just gives peace and generates a feeling of thinking about that peace and love. You're all of a sudden, you're not thinking about the dishes that need to be done and, you know, your fears and your worries and what happened 20 years ago and what's going to happen 20 minutes in the future. You're just being in that energy. And so today it's important for us to start learning. You know, we're like in kindergarten some days. We have to go back to the basics of choosing to live in grace, choosing what that looks like and practicing it. Lately, it's been interesting to me, a lot of things that I've taught and places I've gone, it's like people are so excited to get some tools to be able to go home and practice. Because I grew up with some of this, I forget I just take it for granted everybody knows what I know or sees what I see. And so sometimes I'm stunned that people say, oh, I never thought of that. I could use that tool and I could practice that and I could have that experience. So sometimes it's the simple things by talking about things like this that we get energized, we get reminded, we get filled, we get tools to pack in our spiritual toolboxes to go forward in our life and to hold things in a different mindset. So learning, you know, trying to get away from some of the obstacles that we set up for ourselves is sure truly interesting to me, that we have so many opportunities, so many tools that we can use, but we limit ourselves. And I think for a lot of people out there, it's nice to finally have some scientific backup. And we are slowly beginning to get some of that scientific backup now with the studies on prayer and how it works and how even if you don't know you're being prayed for, this can affect you and you can get healing and faster recovery and everything. I think it's so amazing. The other thing that I think is important is meditation. And I don't know about you, but I struggled for years and years about meditation until one day a teacher told me, because I said, I can't sit in lotus position. I don't fold, spindle, and mutilate like most people. I just couldn't sit in lotus position. 2 minutes into the thing, my mind was on everything that I had to do. I couldn't seem to hold it in the form that I thought, quote unquote, was meditation. But I got some information about meditating from the ARE, Edgar Cayce Foundation, that helped me. But also, one day a teacher said to me, you know that moment when you're sitting in the classroom and you're staring out the window and you're looking at the sun coming through the leaves and all of a sudden you're the tree, you're one with the tree, and you're just gone. You don't even, at one point, you're no longer the leaf or the sun or the tree. You're just gone. That's meditation. And so when I could take it from that context, and do it in that way, literally by looking out a window at something beautiful, whether it's a tree, a plant, or a squirrel. For me, that's how I learned to meditate, because I couldn't just blank my mind and be non-distracted by my thoughts. I had to put it into an outward experience for me of seeing a beauty in something, a tree, a leaf, the sun, until that moment of I was just then one with everything, one with the universe. And then I could begin to listen. Prayer is really, truly, I believe, talking to God, Goddess, all that is divine spirit. And meditation is when you're listening to infinite spirit, as well as your angels, guides, and masters. So removing some of those obstacles, those things that get in the way of ourselves. And sometimes the hardest obstacle to overcome is yourself. You know, when we sit in meditation, we get nervous and restless, and we just get lost in the, all of a sudden, in all of the nervousness, your body's twitching and everything's going every which way. And it takes time to learn control of your mind and your body and to patience. I think truly learning meditation is God's way of teaching me patience, to just be still. And I think we have to take time not to get all bothered or ourselves, and know that meditation for 5 minutes is meditation for 5 minutes, and not get into a whole judgment thing. I have to do it 30 minutes or, you know, I failed meditation 101. That's all ego stuff. So today, if you have a great story about having an experience of being in grace, where time stood still, where you had a communication with spirit or something, please call and share with my listening audience. The number is 1-877-876-5227. Again, the number is 1-877-876-5227. The state of grace, I think, is very interesting when I hear people talk about it, that often musicians have it. They were talking to Josh Groban, and his music's incredible. And he was talking about when he was singing a particular song, and at that moment he really understood that moment of grace, that being lost within that, the beauty of the music, which he felt did not have anything to do with him. Now, when I hear him sing, I think that's pretty amazing, to be in the moment of where it really was about the music and about what was going on in the music, not in him singing the music, not in the people you know, necessarily playing, but in the sounds itself. And that's probably why toning or using the om and some of the sounds that people use is obtains the state of grace for some people. I think there's many ways to come to that state of beingness, to come into that state during meditation. But I think it's harder to probably try and take it out into the world. Because the moment you come back from that expandedness, you seem to start sucking your energy in, and it starts to diminish the experience. And your little mind critic starts saying, well, that didn't really happen, and oh man, what I really saw wasn't really what I saw. And all the mundane things we start doing to ourselves, instead of saying, wow, that was an incredible experience. I really did feel expandedness. I'm going to own that everything I experienced in that meditation or in that oneness was important. It was part of a message to me. And how am I going to carry that out into the world? If you have not read the book, Man's Eternal Quest by Yogananda, I think that's a wonderful book to experience. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing great. First name.
Michael.
Michael, where are you calling from?
Sea Pleasant, Maryland.
Wow. Wow. So, tell me about your state of grace.
It's good. It really is. It's really good. It's just, I couldn't be in a better place, you know.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you experience your state of grace every day?
I just wake up every morning and I just, you know, think about, you know, what I'm thankful for and everything, and it's, you know, stuff like that.
So you expand it by thinking of the things that have been great and good in your life.
Yes.
Good. But see, it's like we were just talking, it's a decision to wake up and say that I choose my state of grace today. I choose to see the gratefulness or the thankfulness in things. Anything else you want to share?
No, that's all.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Blessings. I really appreciate it, especially when men call in, because I think, you know, it's hard for men to sometimes be on the radio or to talk metaphysics. Thank God it's a growing theme now, and we see many, many more examples of that. I also want to, while I've got you on the air, I want to let you know that there's two very amazing DVDs out that I didn't know were out yet. And one of them is The Celestine Prophecy. If you've read the book, it's out now out on a CD, The Celestine Prophecy. And also the first CD about Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh is out. And I was amazed. My husband actually rented them, brought them home. Says, I think these are titles to some books you read. And it was very interesting to see the experience in both of those particular DVDs. In The Celestine Prophecy, it really shows that a couple really great moments of illumination and grace where they have the expandedness and see the, you know, the life force energy around plants. Very, very cool. If you haven't seen it, you gotta rent them. And certainly in Conversations with God, how much better does it get, you know, communing with God and having that experience? Even though certainly at first I think we think if we hear a voice outside ourselves, you know, we get in judgment, but truly, you know, God communes with us, Spirit communes with us in every moment of our life. We're the only ones turning down the volume. So one of the things that Yogananda talks about, I thought I'd share with you today, is the simplicity of a smile. He says, be a smile millionaire, and I think that's very important, that truly we can change a person's vibration by literally just smiling at someone. And if you don't think this is true, go to a park bench or go to a mall and sit and just smile at everybody. It blows their minds. They almost like can't take it sometimes. But it's really good. It's a good experience because all of a sudden after you've, you know, done it for about 20 minutes or less, all of a sudden it's almost contagious. You can't wait to see what somebody's going to do with it, how they're going to react about this. You know, sometimes they look at you like, you know, okay, she's crazy, and what has she got to be smiling about? But there are other people that just, they appreciate it. You can tell that you flip their energy probably for the whole week, most less for the moment. And so he talks about, in this the Man's Eternal Quest, how the simplicity of a smile That smiling at someone gives you bliss and gives the other person bliss and can flip the energy. It is also letting the joyful energy of God flow in you. And it's true, because if you are at a playground, I tell you, and you see little kids playing and laughing, pretty soon you start laughing because you're laughing at them laughing. It's contagious. It really is, the domino effect. And even, not too long ago, they were doing this study of people who have had cancer, watching funny videos like, I'm talking old videos, old movies like Harpo and Crouch, the Marx Brothers, and old slapstick comedian, and so that people would just sort of being purely laughing for the sake of laughing, and how it changed their energy and how it improved their immune system. So there is something to learning this state of grace and putting yourself into that mindset of changing your energy and choosing to put bliss out in the world. It's interesting that he talks about in here that the average man is familiar with four states of mind. So he talks about when you desire something. You desire, in one moment you desire a new car and a new house, and I desire this, I desire that. Then you go into prayer and you pray about something, and you hold it for that 20 minutes that you're praying, and then the next morning you get up, and your desire is, changed. You put in a new order to God. And so you're kind of recklessly ordering things, sometimes things we don't want. I'm sure none of you have ever done this, but I have to say in a few times in my life I have manifested exactly what I wished for. And when I got the order, I was sorry. What was I thinking in the moment? So we have to be conscious of our state of mind. When we desire to be filled with a happiness, what does that mean? What is happiness to you? What is unhappiness? We have to kind of look at the emotions that we are requesting or the energy that we're putting into anything. It's some of the states of mind that we really choose to own. One of the worst is fear. And we spend 90% of our energy on fear. It's sad to say that. And usually we're worried about something that's never going to happen unless we attract it to ourselves. And we often do that. But truly, we kind of get caught in that, fear of fear itself until it escalates and we're in the state of confusion. And it's funny because when we're neither glad nor sorrowful, we're in a state of boredom or depression. And a lot of people get in that. It's interesting to a lot of my clients when I'm talking to them, they know what's wrong in their life, but they don't know what's right in their life. They couldn't tell me what was right in their life. Or they couldn't even tell me what they wanted, if they wanted something, because they had been caught in this fear and, I don't want to say boredom, it's really more of a depression. This self-contained thing that kind of eats us up and it eats our joy. And so we get caught in that rather than choosing to be happy over something. One of my biggest prescriptions I recommend, and people will laugh at this, but truly, is to go and get bubbles and blow bubbles. You really can't stay mad or upset or depressed if you're blowing bubbles. There's something wonderful about bubbles, the simple act of blowing bubbles. And it's contagious. If you take bubbles to a park and you start blowing bubbles, and I've done this. And I actually used to go to a little park for a while. I was doing an experiment. So I'd go to this little park, and I started watching people that were coming there pretty much every day or every other day. And I saw how some of them were very depressed. They were walking just because they had to get out, or they were fighting, something bad at work, and so they would go to the park. They would walk for a while, and then I'd see them sit down on a bench, smoke a cigarette angrily, or sometimes they're giving themselves a good talking to. And I just watched this energy and go on for about 2 weeks, and then I thought, what could I do as a spiritual being to change this? Just for fun to see, how can I affect their energy? How can I change this from being a negative experience, a place to escape, to a place of joy? So I really took bubbles. I went to the dollar store, went crazy, bought a whole bunch of bubbles. I went there, and I sat down and I started blowing bubbles. And people were, like, attracted. They're like, so what's the occasion? So, like, what are you doing? I said, I'm blowing bubbles. I said, you know, you can't stay mad if you're blowing bubbles. And I'd hand them a thing, a bubble. I said, try it. I went over to a man, an older man who I would say was in his late 60s. And I'd seen him almost every day. He'd walk, and he'd go to a certain bench and sit down, and he'd sit there for a few minutes, and then he'd kind of wander off. And he never looked happy. And so I went up to him, I said, I want to give you these bubbles. And he thought that, he goes, well, I'm not going to blow those bubbles. And I said, well, you know, try it. Just try it. Why don't you just give it a try? He goes, no, I'm not going to do it. I said, that's okay, I'll blow them for you. So I just sat down and I started blowing them. And I gave him some space, and he was kind of first, kind of batting at the bubbles, like, you know, get out of here. You know, but in a few minutes, he goes, you know, they are kind of nice, aren't they? In a few minutes, by the time 15 minutes is gone, he had opened his bubbles and he was blowing bubbles. That man, from then on, if he sees me and I still try and go to the park, he'll say, well, did you bring me some bubbles today? I keep them in my car, just in case. And it was amazing that day, people I had seen for over 2 weeks who had not said hello, bye, hi, even though I had said hello, would not interact with me, kind of kept into their gloom and doom, kept into their stuff. There were a few that said hi and were nice back, but everybody that day got affected by that moment of magic. And, in fact, about 4 days after that, I went back to the park. I had bubbles in my car in case. And there were a couple people that came up to me and said, you know, that really changed my life. That simple act of you giving me bubbles changed my life. I realized that I was depressed. I realized that I was making choices that weren't good for my life. I realized that I wasn't seeking joy. And so simple experiences like that, you know, the kids really have it right. The little children really do have it right. They seldom take themselves serious for more than 5 minutes. They fall down and get a boo-boo, you kiss it, all better, and 2 minutes they're off playing on the next thing. Unless we teach them differently. Unless we teach them to own their woundedness, to stay mad, to say, you don't play fairly, I'm going to take my toys and go home. We cannot teach this. We have to teach the state of grace. Because that's the way we'll come into the time of grace and the world of peace. Because we want that. We hunger for that state of peace. So letting the children, watching children, small children, who really don't get caught up in the ego of, you know, I'm on the wrong side, or, you know, you're coloring with the wrong color, we have to watch that we're not teaching them those prejudices, those ego things. Because truly, when you watch kids, they're so amazing. You know, they can be fighting like cats and dogs, and 2 minutes later, they will be changing sides and they'll have forgotten who they were mad at, if we'll let them. So it's in that simplistic state of being that we all come in that natural state of being, of being good enough and being joyful, that we learn and can take that knowingness into the expansion of choosing to be a Pollyanna who really saw the good in everyone. That's one of the best movies that Disney ever made, is Pollyanna, because she really looked for the joy, the happiness in everyone she met. And she was contagious. Before she knew it, she had changed the whole tone by her example. So it's the same way we can choose to take that state of grace, that joy, into our workplace, into our homes. And I know it's hard because we certainly have sometimes people who are not joyful. So we can choose to buy into their energy and own their energy and get contaminated by their negativity. Or we can choose to say, you know, their attitude, their battle, their attitude, their bad attitude, their negativity has nothing to do with me. My choice is this. And my choice to react to their negativity is to pray for them, to throw golden drops, to throw love. Because that's probably why they're in a bad attitude or a frame anyway, is because they're feeling afraid or threatened. I really learned just recently that what was going on between me and someone else really had nothing to do with me. It had to do with this person was an only child and had had their way all their life, and by my presence, not by what I was really doing, by me innately being myself and really just wanting to teach joy and happiness and being in harmony, threatened this person's core belief that if I had friends, more than one, then she somehow didn't have, she was, you know, I was taking away from her. She had had it because of being an only child and being really, having one good friend and not really learning how to have other good friends. She didn't have the concept of how to have more than one friend. And that was a gift. And so she was afraid that I was, quote unquote, taking her friends. And I wasn't. I was actually bringing her more friends that wanted to get to know her, that wanted to expand their understanding of her. But she was so closed in by her belief system and her upbringing that it almost destroyed her and the friends that she had because she wanted to limit them. If you like her, you can't like me. That's crazy. You know, Mary Ellen is one of the most amazing people. She's always happy if you have extra friends because she says, boy, that takes the stress off me because one day she might need me and I might not be able to show up. I might be busy with something. So I hope she has somebody else that she can call. So it's expansion of knowing that being friends with more than one person does not take away from your being friends with whoever you're friends with. It's the expandedness. Many people love Jesus. Why? Why not? You know, who wouldn't want to walk in that energy and that calmness and that beingness as your innate state of being? In the 60s, one of the things they talk about in Carlos Castaneda's book, you'll find where he took, I think, psychedelic something or another, or they took, in the 60s, LSD. And it's because people are trying to get that expandedness through drugs, which does not last and was very detrimental to the body. But they were looking for that grace, that expandedness, that calmness that unfortunately those drugs may have induced for a short period of time, and then you woke up the next day and had a really bad day at the cosmic office. But really, truly, we can create this without those drugs and those things that would become addictions in our lives by learning to be in prayer, by expanding our state of grace and our oneness with spirit, and choosing to share it with other people and experience that totality in a wonderful way. Excuse me. So if you have not read Man's Eternal Quest, I highly recommend it. It has some wonderful quotes, and I love that he does talk about Jesus in his works. He talks about other great masters. He doesn't just say there's only one, which is wonderful. And we can read and learn from many, many books that come into our possession and come in to remind us. All week long, it was interesting that I met people, many, many people that I had not seen in several years. It was almost like Spirit was bringing the lessons that I had taught and worked on when I was learning to expand myself. It's like Spirit went out and got all these people and brought them back into my consciousness this last week out of the clear blue sky saying, remember this person, remember the lesson you gave them. Well, here they're bringing something back to you. So I learned to receive very graciously these gifts these people brought back to me. They reminded me of some things that I had taught them. They shared with me how they took those things I had taught and expanded them beyond anywhere I probably would have gone with that experience and gave me some more teaching tools to share with people because people are amazingly unique. Each person brings to your experience a gift of their background and their experiences. And so it's exciting sometimes to be aware of the experience someone can gift you. Sometimes it's the understanding of an experience, thank God you chose not to have. Because I had the wonderful, I mean, I had the angelic lotto of parents. I was very blessed with parents who, you know, were wonderful. They took in foster kids. You know, I had a large expanded family. My dad was one of 13 kids, so I have lots of aunts and uncles. So for me, I had really good parents. I never had the personal experience of child abuse or any of those things. But at a very young age, because my parents took foster kids, I saw kids come into our homes that had unfortunately been burned. Like, I can remember this one child that came in, and someone had put an iron to the child's back and literally burned him with an iron. Cigarette burns, other things, you know, horrible atrocities. And my, you know, of course, my mind as a child, a little child, could not wrap around this. But I learned through my mother's compassion for these kids. And my mother used to say, there but by the grace of God go you. In other words, that, you know, had I not come into this great family that I chose, that God, that spirit allowed me to have, I could have chose that kind of experience. In later years, as I was growing up and going into my work, you know, even my parents taking foster children became a gift to me, because I could see their woundedness, I could see healing that happened, and I could see them get new families that really truly cared for them. This expanded my understanding when I started doing readings for clients, because I had never had physical abuse. My frame of reference was narrow. So I can remember the first time I had the experience of reading for someone where I actually saw, like a black and white movie, their experience, them being really truly beaten to unconsciousness. And it really, at first, my emotional psyche really rebelled against seeing it and experiencing it. I didn't experience it as in pain, but I saw it as a movie, and my compassion, it overwhelmed me for a moment. I almost couldn't, I had to stop reading for a minute. I had to say, excuse me, just a minute. I have to separate my emotions from this and see it as a black and white movie removed, so then I could talk about it with the person and help them with the healing and the understanding. And I had to go to the next level of saying, dear spirit, why did this happen to this person? What did they choose? What did the person that did this to them choose? What is the dynamics here that are bigger than the picture I'm seeing, the experience? And then perceive that and be able to give it to the client in a way that they could wrap their mind and emotions around it. Because it is hard to understand. For that person, it was an absolute horrific experience, personal. You know, they're at the point they could never forgive the person that did this. But at the time of their life, when I was reading for them, even in the moment of talking about it, they were experiencing the anger, the pain, the woundedness of that moment. We had to get to a point above that so they could see what the choices and the dynamics that were bigger than the actions were. And how could they choose no longer to carry this woundedness, this hurt, this abuse, this anger with them anymore? And so in learning this expandedness without having to experience it, it expanded my understanding of forgiveness and grace. And at that moment, I wondered, had it happened to me, could I be in the state of grace at this moment? How magnificent that person was that I was reading for to choose to heal and forgive rather than to be right and justified anger. And when we come to those moments in our life where we give up the need to be right and to own justifiable anger and to have the need to persecute and to punish, because we're punishing ourselves with that experience, when we learn to go to the state of, I choose grace, I choose healing, I choose wholeness, and that is sometimes the letting go, we expand who and what we are to an amazing degree. And I have great respect for people who have learned the state of grace to move on from their woundedness and their hurts and their abuses. And there's a man who goes around the country and talks. His child was killed in one of the school killings. And he said that he truly forgave the person who killed his son. It doesn't mean he won't miss his son. It doesn't mean that he doesn't still probably mourn every day for that loss. But he realizes that that person who killed his son was in absolute anguish and pain, or he would not have struck out in that way. So a person that can do that and go around and teach forgiveness, teach understanding, to teach people to reach out for someone who is in anguish so that this does not have to happen at another school is an amazing spiritual human being. The people who can have been abused in their childhood, sexually abused in their childhood, and grow up and be advocates against sexual abuse and not, like, give into their, you know, woundedness and become alcoholics and drug addicts, but choose to fight back in different ways, they have found that inner strength, that oneness that makes them go beyond what experience happened to them and choose to illuminate and teach from the experience of the power they find within themselves. It's an amazing opportunity for each of us to go into our oneness and say today, Dear Spirit, God, Goddess, all that is, how can I be of service? And being in service sometimes to someone else, we're in service to ourselves. Whether it's helping someone by taking them to a doctor because they can't drive, by talking to someone on the phone and saying, I love you, I know you're in pain now, I just want you to know I care. Being of service is being of service in every moment in different ways, not big ways, not grandiose ways some days. Some days I'm having a bad day where I don't feel so great. I don't feel like I can go out and, you know, lift the car up off the cliff and rescue somebody. I can't go out and do the things that perhaps I would like to. But I can pray, and I can be in the moment, and I can call someone and say, I just want you to know I love you. In fact, a very good friend of mine, my birthday is this week, and I got a very nice bouquet of flowers. It inspired me greatly, so thank you for that. Hello? Hello? I think he's just beeping to be beeping. So, until next week, I hope that you will take and be in the state of grace, and I wish you lots and lots of blessings. Remember to let your heart light shine, and to light your way in the way for others, and to stay wrapped in the wings of